you down. We're the only team old Carlton knows. With all the champions they like to send up, we'll keep our end up, and they will know that they've been playing against the famous old dark blue.
Twice in a week, not all that common now, but on the back of a great win on the weekend, led by what seems to be a growing new midfield, we go back to an era when it was played almost on a loop to football fans throughout the season. From April till that one day in September, you either liked that song and loved the Blues, or you just had to put up with it. And in their finest of eras, it was small men that did much of the damage, and part of that brilliant mosquito fleet joins us tonight. He's a cracking bloke, and his name is Alex Marcoux. Good evening, Alex.
How you going, Mark?
I'm very well. Great to have you on the show. And are you still invested in watching the Blues, and did you catch that really good, well, it wasn't a turnaround in form, that win that they'd been building up to for a couple of weeks under John Barker?
Yeah, Mark, I go quite a bit. Every home game I go to, I watch them at Etihad, I watch them at MCG, and how do you say it? After Malthouse left, and no due respect to Mick, but the change in the persona of the boys has been phenomenal. And, you know, close loss against Adelaide, and then the great win against Port Adelaide last week, and the crowd was just in awe of them. And, you know, all they wanted was the boys to have a go, and they did more than that. They came home with the bacon.
Alex, you sound like you're sort of down a well. I don't know whether we can grab a better line or...
You're on speaker, are you?
You there?
Oh, that's better.
Yeah.
No, you know what happened? I was in the toilet. The dog was barking.
Oh, I've conducted many a business meeting, and I often talk to Jeffrey on the toilet. It seems to be sort of the best place for
you
such
get the
discussions.
Right.
Sorry, boys.
No, all good, Alex. That win didn't come in small part. It came in no small part because of the midfield. That Patrick Cripps looks fantastic. But I want to talk about a kid called Nick Graham, because he reminds me more of you and your mosquito fleet of the late 70s and early 80s.
Yeah.
He's little, he's determined, and he's been given a chance and taking it with both hands and playing really good football. Obviously, no one told him you needed to be 6'4" to be a midfielder nowadays. And I guess nobody told you when you went down to Carlton that I reckon you might have been about 70 kilos ringing wet, that you were too light for what was the toughest era of footy.
Yeah. Finally, with Nick Graham, all the kid wanted was a chance. And again, I think Barker, and we went to the, when the president and the CEO got a few of the past players together and invited us to their meeting, and they gave us a bit of a run down on where the club stands and where they're going. And one of the things was with Johnny Barker was, you know, to play with kids, give them a chance, and he did that with Nick Graham, and, you know, and that's what kids want these days. Jesolinko did that with me. He basically said, look, you know, you're going to get your spot in the side. I'm not going to drop you. I'll just let you go for 6 to 8 weeks. And kids want to hear that because it gives them a bit of confidence. It gives them, you know, a bit of time to get used to the, you know, rigour of AFL football now, and gives them a lot of confidence to go forward and get their game right.
Alex, it's Jeff Poulter. How are you, son?
Jeff, how are you, champion? Good.
Yep. Now, you told me you had lunch recently with the rest of the mosquito fleet from the late 70s, early 80s, and that's
yes,
the Dominator and Jimmy Buckley and Kenny and Rod Ashman, and Kotodjo's up the country now, wasn't he? But there was a few others in that group.
Harmsey was there.
Harmsey, yeah. Trevor Keogh was in the end of that group, wasn't he?
See, that's it, mate.
Yeah, and you gave me the which I was pleased to accept the accolades for giving you the mosquito fleet title in those days. But Did it just happen by that you suddenly had all these good little players, smaller players? No, they weren't little. Did the club decide that the structure, the coach decide this is the way they were going to set up? They're going to set up with a lot of running players.
No, Jeff. I think we all got there at the same time, and we were all at 5'10"
yep.
type, and there was a lot of good players there. You know, like a lot of those little players, Jeff, were great players, and they went on to. As I'm lucky enough to play in premierships, and I think Jezelenko had no option but to play us because, you know, of the talent there, and he built the game around us. Also, if you remember, we had some great mature players there, like the Southbridge Dooleys,
defenders,
Juan Mackay's, Jezelenko's, there was a great mix of talent from old and new, and. And again, going back to your question, Jeff, we were just all there at the right time, and he could not play us. You know, everyone deserved to play because, you know, they proved themselves.
You know, and I remember you were particularly dangerous at Waverley, where it was actually bigger than it was for, you know, I think about 10 years before Waverley finished, they chopped it back a bit. But you were very hard to beat out there with your pace. And you particularly, you the fastest player I've ever seen, over 30 metres. And it was a big weapon for you, particularly at Waverley, wasn't it?
It was, Jeff. And again, Jezelenko was in the mindset of if you had a talent, use it. And he used to say to me, if you've got the ball, just run with it. It's amazing. When Parko took over, he sort of stopped us from doing that.
Really?
We still won premierships under him, don't get me wrong, but he was a little bit more defensive.
Yep, yep.
Mm. So, you know, and again, bringing it up to this era, Moultal's probably, and I'm not saying, Carl's got a long way to go to get to the, you know, the Fremantles and the Hawthorns and the Swans, but, you know, I think Bark has given him a bit of a sort of loose rein to go and do what you can and prove to me how good you are.
Let's go back to 1979, Alex.
And you're fine.
You come to the club from Thomastown.
Yep.
It's a side that, well, maybe even has underperformed for the last couple of years before you got there.
Yep.
Fourth in 78, missed the finals in 77. This is a side that, you know, in the mid-70s was strong but not making grand finals. So Jezza was obviously, Captain Coach Jezza was obviously looking for something different. You made your debut against the Bombers with three other players who played their first game for the club, and they would have varied careers, but all four of you were very good footballers. Do you remember the other three?
What round was it, Ron?
Well, it was the first round game of the season, but it was round three.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, round three, that's right, yeah.
They made the game against Essendon in round three, but it was the first game of the year, chronologically.
Francis?
Peter Francis, absolutely.
Michael Young?
Not Michael Young, he'd had a handful of games prior to then.
Jono?
Wayne Johnston, spot on. And somebody who got a TV one night.
Clompy.
Robert Clomp. Four very different footballers, but all important in their own way in transforming this team and just giving it a great young feel. Yourself and Jono, of course, were dynamic, and he was explosive beyond belief, Wayne Johnston. I think it would have been a pleasure lining up with those guys and also with the other players. But tell us a bit about Wayne Johnston, because you started with him at Carlton and enjoyed great success.
Finally, I personally think one of the best finals players or one of the best big game players I've ever played with. You know, he would never let you down. Again, you know, if you look at his stats, you know, he's won best and fairest, he's captain of the club, he's four premierships. I was lucky enough to play in three, he played in four. Absolute champion mentally, and he carried injuries. I could tell you days when I'll be at the game preparing, and he's in the medical room getting gunk drained out of his knee, and thinking, how in the hell is this guy going to play? But he'd go out there and play with that sort of pain. You know, his mental strength was unbelievable. And like I said, one of the best big game players I've ever seen.
And that premiership team of that season, of which you... And it's a marvellous effort in a strong club to have played every game for the year and maintained your spot in the side was an enormous effort. It did have a number of players who were relatively young, but interestingly, of that group of four, you played every game. Robert Klomp played every game that season. Mm. Peter Francis, 23 of 24, and Wayne, 20 of 24. So that's a huge output for four first-year players, isn't it?
Huge, compared to the talent we had around us, you know. And you've just shocked me there. I didn't realise I'd played 24 of the 24. And
24 out of
24. Yeah, and like I keep saying, finally, the talent we had there, yeah, Jezelenko, and he lives in Altona, so, and I'm in North Altona, and we catch up from time to time, and he still thinks that if he was there, besides the upheaval that they had at the end of 79, which was criminal, he believes we probably could have won four in a row. So that's how good he thinks that side was in that era.
You're listed in the encyclopedia as being recruited of the year that year. Did you actually get an award from Carlton, Alex? Did you get it? Was it what happened, you know, at the award night? Did you get recognition?
No.
So that's not just...
Like no.
Because I can't remember any more about it. I can't remember the overall, you know, who were the other great recruits that year. But, I mean, just mentioned a few. But it said in the encyclopedia that you were
one of the recruits of the year.
Yeah, that's fantastic, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I don't think there was a formalised award, but when you make your debut and play every game of the season. The one thing that did happen in the finals, it was only the second year of the interchange. It's fair to say that we don't have the rotation policy now as we did then, Alex. And Alex Jezelenko, probably being a playing coach and sending instructions, coaches then used that interchange still pretty much like the reserves bench, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. it's got sort of so professional now in the way, you know, these sports scientists know exactly. And Kenny Sheldon said to me, we're talking over a beer just before Christmas last year. He goes, seriously, the way it's set up now, if you're a coach, and he wasn't being like dead set about it, he goes, but if you were a coach, it'd be the assistant coaches around you, you could coach from your living room with all the computers in front of you and the GPSs on the boys' backs. And that's why the rotation's so important now, because it gives them a breather. When we were playing, you're tired, you just go down to the forward pocket or you rest up. These days,
something that happened that first season, Alex Marcou, our special guest, 34 goals is a great return as well in your debut season. But plenty of behinds, and I'm not saying it because you're an inaccurate kick, far from it, but as Jeff pointed out, you often had the ball running a million miles an hour, being pursued accordingly, and you hit the scoreboard most games, but it would not be uncommon, and I can see now the record backs it up, four behinds, five behinds, four behinds, three behinds.
You had
plenty of pings at the big sticks, Alex.
I did, and a few of the full forwards then, Peter McConville, for example, to this day keeps talking about the mosquito fleet and how goal-hungry we were. And how he used to hate Parko. No one would know where the side was until Saturday morning, and as soon as he saw his name up there, because, you know, he was a fantastic utility player, Parko put him up in full forward, he'd go, oh, my God, I'm not going to get a kick today.
I mean, you did burn a lot of full forwards. Peter Brown, is hard to remember.
West Australians, Ditchburn.
Ditchburn and Ralph couldn't get out of the joint quick enough. I mean, the ball would rain over their head.
So it's amazing. It's funny, you said something earlier on about me having pings at goal. If you look at, that's what probably the mosquito fleet then, and I'm going back to when we were playing, and there's some great small on boards now. But if you look at, you know, the seven of those guys, five of the players would kick more goals than they played games, and the other two were sort of, if they played 100 games, they kicked just under 100 goals. So you've got sort of seven players playing all at the same time, you're probably guaranteed to get a goal out of each gun by the stats.
I mean, spot on. It was such a goal-kicking midfield.
But you had a licence to be hungrier too, didn't you? You didn't have be dead in front to have a shot, did you?
Yeah, Jeff, and that's where, you know, like, Parko tried to pull us back, and without much luck, in a way, he says that we're extroverted and he just let us go at the end. But Jezza, and I keep going back to Jezza, he gave us the free rein where he'd just go, guys, just go out there. He goes, all I want you to do is win the game. I don't care how you win it, I just want you to win the game.
I mean, have a listen to these numbers. In 79, Alex's first season, Barry Armstrong, 22 goals. Ken Shelton, 53 goals. Alex Marcoux, 34. Wayne Harms, 25. Trevor Keogh, 14. Wayne Johnston, 31. Vin Cotoggio, 30. And Jimmy Buckley, 17. It's an assault. Rod Ashman, 10. Less games, though, than was injured in 79. It was just an assault from all angles, and that really was, in no small part, the strength of the team. So I guess some credit needs to be given to the ruckman.
And
defence.
Defence could please themselves, of course, but big...
great defence.
But there was Big Percy and Mike Fitzpatrick were the mainstays, weren't they?
Yep.
I think
Jeff, just I heard him whisper then the defence, but we had a defence, and again, a lot of clubs now, and the strong clubs would, the midfielders would be talking like I am, but going back to when I was playing, our defence was unbelievable, to the point where we and Parko started calling us cheats because we wouldn't go down in the back line because they were so good. We didn't have to go there. The ball would be in Macca's hands or Kenny Hunter's or Dooley's, and we knew where to go to get the ball. And they started a lot of the attack from the back line, which resulted in us kicking goals.
And the other thing was it's perhaps as be expected, but the Mosquito Fleet teamed together well, so you got goals for one another, didn't you? You combined well, the smaller players. You know, gave them off to one another.
It was uncanny how we knew where everyone was, and people might think, oh, he's talking crap here, but if you look at replays, it was uncanny how we knew where our little blokes were, each one of us, and we weren't hungry to kick it ourselves. If someone was in a better position, you'd give it to him and he'd kick the goal.
By 1981, the team had almost was 50% different. So this is a very different side. There's Des English, Scotty Howell. This is the premiership team. Val Perovic, Kenny Hunter, Phil Malan, Greg Wells, David Glascott, Peter Bazzasto. These are all new players. Mario Bortolotto. Now, they started Alex Marcoux on the interchange bench again, but by 1981, they'd cottoned on to what that meant. So it really was just nominal. And you had a smashing game. You had over 30 touches and had a fantastic grand final.
Fantastic grand final. Finally, again, you're just talking about all those players that came in and the turnaround and the turnover. Again, these players were moulded through the McClures, through the Fitzpatricks, on how the Carlton way was. And in saying that too, they were of great talent too, but just the persona of the blokes that were playing at the time got these new blokes in the Carlton way. And again, 81 was successful with one other premiership.
And then on to 82, when Richmond were all powerful, but again, at that stage in football history, Carlton only had to be thereabouts, and they were destined for greatness. And this team, pardon me,
won 17 games in 1980.
16 games in 82.
In 80, yeah. No.
I'm saying, but they're, you know, another great team, and this time another Jones in the ruck. Tell us a little bit about the role that Warren Jones played that afternoon on Mark Lee, and you had front row seats to the architect from the centre bounce of Richmond's nervousness.
Well, Parkin, before the game started, basically said to the big boys, look, if any one of our little blokes goes down, you just turn around to your bloke and make sure he knows that we're here to play football, and make sure he knows that we're here in a physical sense too. And I remember the first quarter, as she went down, Cats or Mario turned around to Cloakie and gave him the best right hook and knocked him to the ground and said, that's for my bloke, my mate up the front there in the forward line. And then Wow turned around and did the same to Lee. So Lee was pretty, and again, with all due respect to the general, Wow, I think really, not, I wouldn't say scared him, but had something over Lee and used that day and just, physically, not in a bad way, just, I think, nullified him.
Yeah, when you got that handlebar moustache and you're 6'7" and you've got wide shoulders, and in those days tattoos meant something, I can understand why the general might have been reduced to maybe a staff sergeant or something.
Exactly. Well, finally, you had tats then when someone had, you're right, when someone had tats in your thing, ooh,
yeah, that meant something. Wow. Now
everyone's got them.
Everyone's got them, yeah.
Even me, and I'm piss weak. We've got to take a break, Alex. When we come back, I'll put to you that after 87 games and 3 AFL premierships, I want to know whether you thought life was easy in the big league. And if you did, you got a rude awakening when you had a late career transfer down to Moorabbin. When the Saints go marching in. Well, at the end of Alex Marcoux's career, that was a short but much enjoyed by St Kilda fans period with the Saints, as St Kilda went from easy beats in 1987 to something a whole lot better. But Alex, before you would come to St Kilda, there was still 4 more years of very good football at Carlton, though injury started to impact on your football career. And I said before the break, after 87 games, 3 premierships and plenty of finals, it's something you don't take for granted, because through injury, things got a bit harder over the next few years.
Fine, absolutely. And to this day now, you never take premierships for granted. And when people say to me, oh, you know, you're a good player at Carlton, did you play any premierships? I go, 3, and they go, oh my God. And not a lot of footballers and great footballers playing premierships, let alone 3 of them. So I am humbled, I'm modest, and I, to this day, very honoured to play in that navy blue jumper and have 3 medallions around my neck.
And Alex, who gave you the nickname Marcel? Was that Lou Richards or was it the blokes at the club?
Jack Dyer.
Jack Dyer.
No, what he said he couldn't pronounce my name. He used to call it Marceau. And then Barry Armstrong, when I went to the club, I was so quiet. You know, a young guy, seeing all these legends that I used to watch on TV, he'd say to me, well, say something, will you? And I'd get quiet, and then he started calling me Marcel Marceau, the great mime, and that's how I got my name.
You weren't only quite, but you were a dapper-looking fellow. You were involved in clothing at one stage, weren't you?
Yeah, you looked involved in it, mate.
I said to Viney, you looked like one of those French film directors. You know, you weren't picking Mr. Footballer walking down the street.
I wish I was. I'd be making more money than I am in the bloody rag trade.
Alex, you would come to St Kilda during a period when it was not uncommon for Carlton players to come to St Kilda. I wonder whether you were... I don't know who was president then, whether it was Ian Rice or...
Pays, maybe?
No, of Carlton. Oh. But I don't know how...
Elliot.
Was it John Elliot?
Elliot.
Did you go into the office and he'd say, well, Alex, you can either retire or go to St Kilda, or it doesn't make any difference to us? Because it seemed as though many of your teammates would head down to Moorabbin. And you know what? Quite a few of you were actually very good for the team. And you were there when St Kilda started playing better football, and a lot of it on the back of one T. Lockett.
What a player he is. Oh, my God. Or was. Look, finally, Macca got the heave-ho from Collar. He wanted to stay at Carlton. Collar did a deal with St Kilda, and before he knew it, he's gone to training, and Collar said, no, you've gone out of St Kilda. So Peter McConville, unbeknownst to him, was a St Kilda player. Wow went down with him, and then the year after, Collo sat me down, and by the way, Collo's on the Spirit of Carlton committee with me, and you know, we have coffees and we laugh about it now. And he goes, Al, everyone gets sacked at the end. So in a way, he's probably right. But he said, look, you can stay here, but we're going to give the young kids an opportunity, or you can go and look elsewhere. And I was a little bit devastated, yeah, because we, at that time, we didn't have any managers, and I've walked out, and Kenny Sheldon's out the front. And he said to me, what did he say to you? And I said, oh, blah, 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 blah. You know, you can stay. And he goes, well, he said the same to me. He goes, oh, stuff him. He goes, we're going to go. I said, where are we going to go? Yeah, don't worry, I'll find us somewhere. And we shook hands. And he goes, where I go, you go. And where you go, I go. About 2 weeks later, he's rung me and he goes, Al. I said, what? He goes, I found us a club. And I said, where? He goes, St Kilda with Macca. I said, you're kidding. He goes, no. Not that I was keen to go to St Kilda because of, you know, their performance and everything like that, but we got down there and Ricky Nixon came down, Spiro came down, Ian Muller came down. And honestly, Finey, I got down to that club and walked in, and I was always a rap for Barker, and he was there. And what a great man he was too, just quietly. And as a player, you know, I never realised how good he was until I actually played with him. And then you look around the room, and I looked at the blokes they had down there, and I thought, Jesus, you know something? This could be good here. You know, we could really, really, you know, have something special here. And I think in 87, we won, I'm not sure how many games, 7 games, 8 games?
Yeah, 1987, St Kilda probably won 8 games, I can check it, but more importantly, of the last 6 or 7 games of the season, there would have been 4 or 5 wins.
Yeah.
And it was including a very good win against Collingwood that the St Kilda supporters enjoyed immensely.
Yep. Yeah, so we had...
Well, there were nine wins that season.
Nine wins, we lost about 4 games by under a goal. And I just thought to myself, we are on something here. With all due respect, and I'm saying it in the most nicest way, I don't think we had the right coach there. And as much as Doc was a fantastic player and history says he was, his mind and...
Well, he had ill health, didn't he,
well,
Alex?
Yeah, you know, he battled ill health, and it was... Mm. You know, St Kilda had prayed for the Messiah to return, but it was...
It was probably...
some years beyond, like his playing debut for St Kilda, his coaching debut was past the best time as well. So what you're saying is generally accepted as being very true.
Yeah, and then he got sick, and then a couple of things happened. But look, honestly, Finey, I had great times down there. I saw some absolute champions come through, Nathan Burke, Robbie Harvey. I saw the absolute master of full forward, Tony Plugger Lockett.
But you didn't just see Plugger Lockett. You gave St Kilda supporters, myself, and all of us who had been and suffered through the 80s, and it really was suffering. There was no draft. There was not. We went every week, and in round 19, Tony Lockett stood on the verge of 100 goals, and it was Alex Marcoux who delivered the pass onto the chest of the first man to kick 100 goals for St Kilda since Bill Moore had done it in the years prior to the Second World War. And that is a moment that I'll never forget. And you were part of, no small part of, a great moment in St Kilda history.
Hey, finally, I remember that. And I was rapt too. He grabbed me afterwards, and he grabbed me and Nicky Winmar in the change rooms. And he goes, this is serious. He grabbed the both of us and he said, I thank you, boys. Without you, boys, the way you passed the ball to me, I would never have got to that.
And that's why Alex was a very popular player at St Kilda, but unfortunately, within a year, again, injury played its part, and this time there was no coming back.
No coming back. And again, finally, the frustrating thing about that was it was hamstrings and medical. I'm not just talking about St Kilda now, but I'm talking about the whole sports science area wasn't as good as it was now. And now, you know, they scan your everything. They do everything, and they know exactly what's wrong with you. Then no one knew, you know, and, you know, you'd want to train, you'd do it again. You want to train and you do it again. And at the end, it gets very frustrating. So you have to put your hand up.
I want to finish with one notion about Alex Marcoux, who was never on looks the size of the natural football champion. On first glance, you might have thought, well, here's a bloke that we can easily put away. He's light, he's quick, but like many light, quick players of the era, you cop plenty of attention. But this is a mark, and I'll never forget this, of Alex Marcoux. Alex, you probably don't know this. Your highest ever possession game in football was against Richmond.
Yep.
In the first round or early rounds, first round of 1983.
Yep.
You had 34 touches.
Yep.
Which was a heck of a lot in those days.
Yep.
Do you know what your second highest amount of touches ever in a game was?
I don't, mate, no.
It was the only game you ever played against your beloved Carlton. It was for the Saints.
Yeah.
And we got beaten that day, but I just
remember... Princess Park by 1 point, I remember. Oh, yes, yeah.
It was a famous game. It was one of the hardest things to watch. The last quarter went for...
Yeah.
The last quarter, I think, went for 36 minutes.
Yes,
Bill Hanna was given a free kick, but...
That's right.
Tom Alvin was given a free, but he stayed down and Mill Hanna took it. But it was a day where we almost did the impossible and won at Princess Park, and you had 10 more touches than any player that day. You were a man possessed. Because of your great pride, because of your great loyalty to the team, on this occasion, St Kilda, you almost helped to get us over the line for a miracle win. And I remember that, and I'm sure Carlton supporters, more importantly, remember three great premierships. We thank you for joining us tonight, my friend.
Thanks a lot, Alex.
Pleasure, Finey.
Thanks, Alex.
Jeff Polder, you're a gentleman scholar, and we had a few beers room in the old days.
We did. They were great days, Alex.
Good boy, man.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Bye.
Did he pay you? No, I'm talking about Pulse.
Do we have a few beers?
A few? That doesn't begin to count them. What a great bloke, Alex Marcoux. Three premierships, a little champ, a speedster, and to the very end, a true team player.